Today's topic is financial coaching. It's a topic we've actually covered in a Wistline probably about a year ago. But I'm revisiting the topic for a couple of reasons. One is because I think a lot of people, more people are interested in the topic now. Two is we've probably learned a lot since we last talked. And three, there's some potential for some projects on the horizon that I'd love to hear if people are interested in it and get some feedback on. That's the general agenda for today's call. It's a beautiful day, and I promise not to keep you more than an hour. But before we get started, does anybody have any issues they want to make sure I talk about or any questions before we get rolling? So I know some of you are actually engaged in coaching programs. Some of you are thinking about engaged in coaching programs, and some of you have just said, I don't really understand what coaching is and how it's different from anything else. So I think all those are great, great perspectives, and hopefully we can cover that whole waterfront. Typically on these calls, I try to send out some advanced materials, and this time I sent an extremely long document, which I hope you didn't feel in any way compelled to go through. But it's about a three-year-old paper I did for the NEAKC Foundation. Well, right when we were beginning to think about financial coaching as a strategy, so I thought I'd talk a little bit about how that project came to be, and then how sort of at least my thinking about financial coaching has evolved since that point in time. And then we can start talking about how we might apply this here in Wisconsin and get your feedback on what we ought to do next. But I was approached, I think, by the NEAKC Foundation about 2006. They were curious about this word called coaching, and some of their grantees were using financial coaching, they called it. Casey began to invest in training for financial coaching, so actually taking organizations that were doing financial literacy education or some kind of financial intervention and training them to be financial coaches. They partnered with an organization called Tribe Coaching, which is, I think, based out in California. And Tribe is really focused on coaching for any kind of topic, so life coaching, career coaching, and coaching as a concept. And I'll talk in a bit about what we mean by coaching as a concept. But, I mean, that was the basic model. It was about a three-week-long training. And so most of the Casey grantees were nonprofits, and they found that to be a bit excessive. And most of all, it didn't really connect to how you would apply this in a financial setting. So in the end, that's not something that is still continued. But what Casey has funded now is a coaching program, which is primarily underwritten by Bank of America Foundation, to do training for coaches that takes about 3 days, and then people go away for about 6 weeks. They practice it. They go on the phone with some coaches on their coaching, and then they come back for another three-day training. That's been going on for about a year now, and we're doing some follow-up surveys to see how people like that. But it's a specific application of financial coaching as opposed to coaching in general. It certainly builds on what used to be in the old Tribe model, but includes some new wrinkles as well. So, you know, at the time they were sort of thinking about all this, doing coaching training and getting organizations up to speed on how to do coaching, some much more basic questions came across, which is like, what is coaching and why would we apply it to financial education? And that's really where this paper came in, is to try to think about some of those bigger picture issues. The genesis of this in a lot of ways was when we review the literature on financial education or financial literacy, by and large, the effects of programs are small. And they're not zero, but they're pretty small. That the average person coming into a financial education workshop has very few sustained changes in their behavior. And a lot of what we find happens is that either the worst people come in, the people who have the most massive problems for whom we don't expect a little bit of education is going to matter anyway, or the very best people come in, the people who are highly motivated to change are the ones that actually come in. So it wouldn't matter whether you gave them the education or not. They're going to find a way to make their lives different. And so coaching is sort of different. It's not a replacement for financial education in any way. It's a complement of financial education. And it's also not counseling, and it's not case management or sort of any of the other terms you might think about it. So I want to talk a little bit about what makes this different from other kinds of models. So the basic theory behind coaching is that people need help in sticking to whatever their plan is. So if they set a goal, there are a lot of things that might prevent them from reaching that goal, including their own procrastination. You know, I know I need to save more, but I just keep putting it off, and I'll save more tomorrow. You could think about the same thing with dieting. I know I shouldn't eat that cupcake, but, you know, I'll not eat a cupcake tomorrow. I'm going to eat one today. So we sort of continually kind of betray ourselves. But we're less likely to do that if we have somebody looking over our shoulder, somebody who's holding us accountable to what we said we were going to do. And in some ways, that's what coaching does. It provides this external source of self-control, this accountability mechanism, that somebody can look at us in a non-judgmental way and say, you said you were going to do this. Are you doing it or not? And, you know, it's really not much more than that. The second thing that we think about coaching doing in a very systematic way is helping people overcome just, you know, basically organizational problems. So it's one thing to know how to know what a spending plan is or to know what the categories of the spending plan are. It's another to get yourself organized every Sunday night to open your bills and to write your spending plan down or to check and see whether you're actually keeping up with the spending plan that you set out for yourself. So that's this executive attention kind of thing you read about sometimes in the psychology literature. Do people really focus on these higher level tasks that they don't want to do until it's too late? So, for example, if you really don't like dealing with bills and you put your bills on a shelf and you don't open your mail and you keep putting that off and putting that off, by the time you finally do it, you end up paying your bills after they're due. So then you have a late fee, and the next time you get a bill, it's an even more painful process, and so you want to do it even less, and you get this sort of negative cycle where you just don't want to pay attention to these things because it becomes too much of a hassle. So that's the other way that coaching could really provide an intervention, is it can help people overcome these executive attention problems in addition to the sort of self-control kind of issues. And that's fundamentally what makes coaching different. Coaching is not about being an expert. You know, you're not certified as a financial planner or a financial counselor. Coaches don't give advice. Coaches aren't judgmental. If somebody comes in and says their goal is to buy a house, and you know that is not the thing that you would do if you were them, it's really not your place to set. You work with that goal. And what a coach does is say, well, if your long-term goal is to buy a house, can we break that down into some things that I can check back with you in a week or 3 weeks or a month and know whether we've made some progress? And so while the long-term goal might be buying a house, the short-term goal might be just setting up a savings account for a down payment. So a month from now, we can know definitively whether or not you've opened a savings account or not and how much is in that account. And we can set a goal for having it opened by X date and having X dollars in it. And if you set that goal as the client and I as the coach check in with you, you can tell me up or down, did I do it or didn't I? And if not, then we try to create a goal that you can achieve in the next 6 weeks or a week or whatever the time period is that you're going to check in again. So the coach isn't there to say, you know, shame on you for not getting it done. The coach is there to say, well, maybe we need to think about reframing these goals in a way that's more achievable the next time around. So it's a really different kind of model than counseling. Counseling is generally something that's provided to people when they're in trouble. You know, it's more of a therapeutic kind of model. We've got an acute problem that we've got to try to solve. Somebody is, you know, they've got a bill that's due and they might lose access to utilities or they might get evicted or, you know, some pressing issue is really facilitating them coming into the counselor. And generally counseling ends once that acute crisis has passed. It's not a long-term engagement, although sometimes it can take a while to fix these problems. It still tends to be sort of focused on solving the problem. It's also different from mentoring. You know, mentoring is another thing we hear something about. But the thing about mentoring is that it's not an even relationship. So a mentor typically is seen to be more of an expert and more senior or more important. Or, you know, mentors give advice and can, you know, certainly be more judgmental than we'd like to see a coach. You know, even case management is different. Because case management can be a combination of counseling and mentoring and other things. But it's also making sure that people pass through certain stages and typically some kind of a timeline, whether that's a timeline prescribed by a program or a policy or whatever else. So, you know, even case management's a little bit different. Now, counseling, mentoring, case management, all of them could incorporate aspects of coaching. But it's very difficult to be a coach, to be a non-judgmental coach who's helping people set goals and holding them accountable to those goals and also do something else, like be an expert or be judgmental on some other account or, you know, sanction people for not following the rules, those kinds of things. So these roles, while it may seem like I'm splitting hairs, actually can be pretty important. When we see coaching not work well, it's because these roles aren't well defined. And we have somebody who's an expert really giving advice but calling themselves a coach, or who's in a position of authority trying to coach somebody when, you know, if people don't follow through, they could be sanctioned or they could be rewarded. So those are some key differences between these different kinds of approaches. As I said in the beginning, financial coaching is not a replacement for financial education. People need to have knowledge, and that's what financial education provides. They need information. But oftentimes, people don't know what they need to know. And once they get into a situation where they're trying to achieve goals and held accountable to achieve goals, suddenly that information might become more important to them, and they might become more interested or more willing to engage in real behavior change. So I think one of the things that we often think about with coaching is that it becomes a platform that encourages people to really begin to become more critical of their own level of knowledge and their own behavior, to really think about what they need to make progress. And then the education they receive becomes something they really want and need, as opposed to something maybe that they more passively might just sit and absorb. And there's this real focus in coaching on application. So we're going to learn something, and then we're going to practice it, and we're going to try it and practice it and get that, get that feedback. Not so much feedback, but that accountability of having to be accountable to the coach and referring back to what you said you were going to do and see if you got it done or not. Other aspects of coaching that make it a little bit different from some of these other approaches is that it really is focused on behavioral outcomes, not just knowledge change. Certainly we think people are going to learn as they go along the way, but it's not the only thing they're doing. It's also very collaborative. It's ongoing and it's very iterative. So, you initially may come in as a coachee or a partner to me as a coach and say, I want to buy a house. And, again, I don't pass judgment on that, but I work with you to try to reframe that into something that we can achieve and that you can be accountable in a shorter run. So in a coaching relationship, there might be, four or five or six revisions of goals even over a few-month period, because we keep kind of honing and refining and figuring out what people really want to do. And one of the things I hear experienced coaches say a lot is you have to trust the process. Somebody may want to choose a goal that you, again, would personally not encourage for them. But if you trust the process, the process of refining goals and making some progress and revisiting goals actually ends up getting the people closer to a place that you might have wanted them to go to in the first place. And the key is they got there through their own energy. They've sort of been empowered to deal with these issues, to set goals, to revise them. And so a year from now, when you're not around, you're not their coach, they can do it on their own in a similar context. And that's one of the failings of some counseling programs, is that people then go back to the counselor to try to get things done. With coaching, if it's done right, and if people, you do trust the process and let people make their own mistakes and sort of revise and get to a new place, they can make, changes on their own and can kind of graduate from that coaching relationship. As I said earlier, another aspect of coaching is this idea of practice. We might actually, do the same goal a couple of times and let people try to work on it. So an example might be signing up for a benefit. Once somebody says a goal of signing up for a particular benefit to their employer, the next goal might be to sign up for a different kind of benefit. But once they've gone through the process once, they might be able to do it themselves the next time. So it's that sort of practice of new behavior. And I think what's most interesting to me about the coaching context is that it does make people hungrier to learn. In a small coaching pilot we have here in Dane County, Deb Neubauer has done a great job with financial workshops for a long time. But it's amazing how hungry people are to attend those workshops after they've gone through a couple months of coaching. Now this somewhat dry topic of, although it's not dry when Deb presents it, but it could be dry, of a spending plan or budgeting becomes much more important and relevant for them. So they're much hungrier for the information at that point in time. And I think ultimately it probably leads to more behavior change than if we had just given them that workshop alone. Now I've talked a lot about the sort of theory of coaching and why we think coaching should work and sort of where it comes from. I want to talk a little bit about models of coaching and how it can be delivered, but let me pause and see if anybody has any sort of big picture questions before we get into the how you implement it.
This is Beth from Washburn County, and one of the big emphases in our county is to do financial education. But I'm wondering if I can pitch to our county board about the whole financial coaching thing. Do you find that it takes a lot of your time, and is that something that Extension staff can provide? Or has anybody done this, and how do they work it into their schedule? I'm kind of looking for a little bit of that.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about implementation next.
Okay, thank you.
With that, maybe we'll just get into the implementation stuff if nobody has any thoughts on bigger picture.
Hi, yeah, this is Sue Allen over in Marquette County. And can you hear me?
Uh-huh.
Okay. I think you've pretty much covered this, but if you could just sort of restate the question that I get about this is our county, our extension committee wants to make sure that we're not doing social services, you know? And I get the difference. I get the difference. But is there anything you can say about social services that would make it clear that financial coaching is not social services? I think the no advice, no judgment, we're not holding them to having to improve a behavior, but yet we want to see behavior change. And, you know, we're not withholding any kind of entitlements or services or anything like that, you know,
right,
if they don't improve, you know.
Right, I think that's all very valid. You know, certainly social services could use more of a coaching model, but they tend to be more of a counseling kind of model. And that may be most appropriate given that they're encumbered in this other system that, you know, because
mm-hmm.
they are involved with benefits and public programs and other things that might make it more sticky.
So saying this is what you should do or this is what you need to do would be more, or this is what I want to see you do is more of a counseling
right.
language.
Or this is what you have to do in order to
avoid
saying.
This is what you have to do in order to.
Right.
As opposed to here are some things that we know really are good fundamental skills for managing money well. And then you teach them and make sure they know them and can apply them. And then what they do with it is kind of up to them.
Right. You know, I think one of the key things to get across to people who are new to this concept is that the coaching model is one model and that it is used for clients who are sort of ready to make a change. So coaching is not a great strategy to use for people who are entering bankruptcy or who are homeless or who are, you know, really in the midst of a crisis of some
mm-hmm.
kind. Coaching makes sense for people who are stable and who have the capacity to start setting and achieving goals. And so it's really, it's a complement. You can think of it as a continuum of services. So social services may kick in more when people are in crisis and help them become more stable. But once they're more stable and they start to exit that system, that maybe is where coaching can play a key role in helping move them forward to the next stage.
And I can see how coming to a financial management class could do the same thing for people that you've just described because they're ready to learn and wanting to learn and capable of learning, that sort of thing. So how would the coaching be better or not as good as just coming to a class?
Again, they're probably complements. So, you know, classes and coaching are complements. The thing is, I can know, let's use a food analogy.
Mm-hmm.
So I can know that eating sugar and fat is bad for me.
Mm-hmm.
And you can teach me all the nutritional information about it, and I can know it, and you can quiz me on it, and I can tell you up and down why I shouldn't do that, but I still eat the sugar and fat.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I knew somebody was looking over my shoulder every week or every month to say, how much sugar and fat have you eaten? You know, your goal was to cut down on that. Have you done it? I would probably do less of it. So it's this, again, it's this self-control or this executive attention piece. Executive attention meaning paying attention to your bills and your budgeting and that kind of thing, and self-control, doing what you said you were going to do, holding you accountable to yourself.
So almost like a homework. They don't need to be accountable to us, so if they don't do it, there's not a judgment or a penalty or a consequence, but there's simply an acknowledgement that, okay, there's something else you want to try to make sure you do it next time or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Then it's a process of reframing the goal to something that maybe is achievable.
Okay.
It's breaking things down into incremental steps so that people can start to do it on their own. Okay, so I'm glad you brought that up, because I think this issue about who's ready for coaching is really important. And again, I want to emphasize that coaching is yet another tool, and it's a complement to peer-to-peer, it's a complement to one-way workshops, it's a complement to counseling. So all these things work together. It's just a powerful way to get people over, particularly that self-control and executive attention hump that they might have. Okay, so implementation. There are at least three different models of delivering coaching, probably four, depending on how we define things. So one is that you as a professional could become a coach. You could work on getting some training on how to use coaching techniques, on how to do goal setting, how to ask these kind of provocative kind of questions that help people to be sort of self-critical and rethink and reframe. There's a really good book called Coactive Coaching, which is available from the Extension Media Library. And it's also, I think, $25 on Amazon. That you could read, and it'll probably give you some good tips about coaching in general. It's not specific to financial coaching, but just coaching in general. Certainly you could do that. And there are some educators in extension who have taken that leap. I would say that there's definitely some time to get yourself sort of up to speed on these techniques. It takes some practice. It's really hard to hold back and not give advice, believe it or not. You really have to work at it for a while to get pretty good at it. But most of all, it's time consuming. A single client, let's say you are part of a program where you define coaching as a 9-month engagement, you probably are going to meet with them at least monthly, maybe face-to-face, definitely face-to-face the first few times, and phone combination, email over time. That one client might take 12, 15 hours of your time over that 9-month period. And that's just one client. I mean, you can imagine that this, try 10 clients. Certainly this starts to become really overwhelming to think about delivering. So it's certainly possible and doable, but it's a major commitment. And never would you be able to serve more than, I think a coach to serve more than 20, 25 people a year would be incredibly productive. It's pretty small in scale and therefore pretty expensive if you were to actually put a dollar value on your time. So it's a model. It's out there. My guess is for most people, this becomes another tool in the toolbox that they use occasionally, but it's not a major program they roll out in that kind of way. So, okay, we've talked about that model, the sort of professional financial coach. The second model is a volunteer financial coach. And in this case, the extension educator is the trainer of the volunteers, the trainer, the coach's coach. And we've seen a couple of different models where this has been, most of these are just sort of in process this year, so I can't say, we have hard data on this, but they look good. I mean, the responses from the participants are good. Responses from the volunteers are good. People tend to be pretty happy with it. But basically, as a training, in Dane County, I was involved with it. It was a two-night training, so it was about 4 hours of training. The first night was some basic coaching theory, much of what you've heard today, and some basics about the sort of financial context of lower-income people, because mostly we're talking about coaching people who, for whom it's not a case of what 401k choice should you make, or how should you allocate your investment portfolio, but what do you do when a creditor calls, and how do you check your credit report, and those kinds of issues, which some volunteers aren't familiar with. So there's some sort of culturalization about the issues that the population sort of needs, that need to be taught. But then the second night, the second 2 hours is all role play. So we create little, theoretical clients and have them serve as coach and partner for each other and sort of coach each other in these theoretical settings. And it's amazing. They know they're not supposed to give advice. They've been trained not to give advice, and they get in these settings, and they just can't help themselves. And so they learn a lot, I think, through those role plays and how they go about that. The coaching programs I'm familiar with, we're talking generally about 10 to 20 volunteers that are paired with each probably one coaching partner. So again, you're not serving a ton of people, although you as a educator really just have to do the train the trainer and then provide the structure for the coaches. And the structure is very important. By structure, I mean there's the way, at least in Dane County, Deb opens up her office for 2 hours on the second Tuesday or Wednesday of every month, so that the coaches and the partners can come and meet there in a safe place, and you know, they're not in a McDonald's or some place like a library. And then they also offer these every other month, a workshop on a topic. So the topics so far have been a spending plan, credit repair, and then the last one will be savings. So just three topics over the course of about a seven-month program. But that's a different model. I think that model is interesting for two reasons. One, you can serve a lot more people as an educator, you know, for the same amount of time invested. More actual clients get the coaching service. And, you know, oftentimes you're referring people that you had as students in your education workshops to these coaching programs, and you can kind of select who you think would be a good candidate. Second is you're getting volunteers engaged in a topic and with a community with whom they probably wouldn't have had a lot of connection before. So you're making them more aware of the issues of these populations and getting them more engaged in the community in this way. So it has a nice sort of community engagement piece of it as well. So I mean, I think that model has some merit. It's volunteers are not cheap. So it's, you know, you all know that, but volunteers take a lot of time, care, and feeding. Some volunteers have to be fired. You know, the model we've had in Dane County is actually a contract between the client and the coach, so everyone's clear about what the expectations are. There's a clear beginning date and ending date. We've made all the dates clear, so we've tried to make, you know, as structured as possible so that, you know, there's real follow-through. The worst thing for a client or for a partner is for their coach to be unavailable or not, you know, not do their job, so you have to make sure you structure it in such a way that they can do that. Another model is, so we talked about this sort of professionalized model and the volunteer model. A third model we've experimented a little with in Dane County, with extension again, is students. We have seniors in the personal finance program here who are, you know, college students, college undergraduates, but they're in their fourth year, so they're pretty knowledgeable and beginning to have some professional skills. And we are doing what we call a financial clinic, where they've recruited people from the low-income tax credit program, the VITA program, so people who've come through the last few months, to offer them this opportunity to work on their financial goals. They're working with them every week, so it's intensive, and then the three peak clients are week to week. And we overcome the issues of the students being, you know, we worry about how well a student can interact in these kinds of settings. We do the same kind of training I've talked about before. But at these financial clinics where the coaching takes place, we actually have a certified financial planner present and available. So they can be the expert. They can step in if needed or if a client has questions that extend beyond what the student coach is capable or should really be providing. So we sort of mix this educational component of having an expert in the room and the goal setting and accountability that's delivered through the students. Again, I like this model because many of our students are going to become financial planners who will never work with anybody with less than $500,000 in assets. So we've exposed them to a model and to a population they otherwise wouldn't have contact with. We're also exposing them to the financial planning community, as well as the financial planning community to us and our work and to the clients we serve. So it's a nice, you know, a nice sort of approach in that way. The key with students is you've got to get it done in a semester. So that's why we're meeting every week. And it's pretty intensive. So we're, you know, it's basically a 6 to 8 week program where they meet with the client every week. With volunteers, they might meet once a month for 6 or 7 months. So it's a, you know, slightly, it's a lot longer time period in which people are served. But, you know, with students, you're sort of stuck with that structure of the semester. And the last model is to think about financial coaching as a way to deliver services through existing systems. So you could actually be an extension educator, somebody who trains coaches in other organizations who could do coaching. So maybe they're human services organizations, maybe they're financial institutions, maybe they're, you know, other settings where you have contact with clients who you think might be a good target for this. You know, one example we've talked a little bit about is families in Head Start. Families in Head Start are young. They have young children. They're beginning to think about their future goals. Generally, they're employed. You know, they might be a good sort of on an upward trajectory where it might make sense to try to do a coaching model. Another might be people coming out of a recovery program. Like there's a program here in Dane County where people are exiting from emergency housing into more permanent housing. So it might be a good candidate. They might be good candidates on an upward trajectory for coaching. And so in that case, we'd be training social service agencies to have coaches on staff that could work with these clients over a defined period of time. And again, it's not dissimilar from the volunteer model. It's less structured in that you won't have to provide the workshops and the regular times for the meetings to take place. But you're still providing that training to these workers or caseworkers or whatever their current role is to begin taking on this new and different role of a coach with clients. Each of these has their pluses and minuses in terms of how they require cooperation with other agencies, how they require your own time. The management of a volunteer is certainly not easy. The management of a collaborator in another public department can be difficult too. So all these things are challenges. But I think it's a matter of really assessing the environment and assessing the partners and assessing the population to be served and figuring out what makes the most sense to provide in any given context. I want to talk a little bit more about assessment and some other additional services that can be integrated into coaching. But before I do that, does anybody have any just general questions about the implementation side?
Hi, Michael. This is Kathy in Ashland. I do have a question on implementation, and you may have covered this with me before, but one of the concerns we have when working with volunteers that would have access to someone's private financial information was that of the background check. What do you recommend or what have you seen work as far as ensuring confidentiality and security for the folks that we'd be working with?
So several things. One, as part of the initial, we call it contracting, but the initial agreement to be a coach and also to be in the coaching relationship, we actually have signed documents. So the coach agrees, for example, that they will not sell anything, that they will not share information, that they will not, that they're not going to give advice, blah, blah, blah. The partner agrees that they understand that this person's not giving advice, and if they are giving advice, if the client follows that advice and it doesn't turn out to be good, no one's liable for that their actions are their own. So we have a lot of that language built into these kinds of disclaimers, including information exchange. And in most cases, the coach, because they're not an advisor, they're not an expert, doesn't need to see information. So I may tell you need to create a spending plan. If you want me to review your spending plan, we could do that. But all I really need to know is if you're following through with what you said you were going to do. So I don't need to look at bank account balances or credit reports or those kinds of things. You might have a goal to get a credit report, and I might hold you accountable to pulling your credit report by such and such a time. But I'm not there to review those things with you or anything like that.
Okay, so that wouldn't necessarily fall under this coaching format. That would fall more potentially under an educational format where you're, just as an example, teaching spending plans. Is that correct?
No, coaches would not review spending plans.
Oh, no, but I'm saying to do a spending plan would be more under that educational format as opposed to the coaching format.
So if a client had a goal of having a spending plan, you as a coach might talk to them about how they might learn to do a spending plan, but you wouldn't do it for them, nor would you teach them how to do it.
Okay. So, but as an educator, that could fall in under the kind of the umbrella of our offices here.
Right. So a coach might refer people and say, well, is one of your goals to do a spending plan? Do you have a sub-goal of learning how to do that? Well, here's one resource available for you to do that.
Okay.
But by and large, we're not talking about any kind of information exchange. We do usually have a pre and post survey in the models we've been looking at lately, which do have information on them. So there is a standard consent form at the beginning that says this is for evaluation only. And as we've used the data, we don't include any client identifying information. So we don't know their name, address, or anything like that. It's just an anonymous number. Any other general implementation questions?
Yes, Michael. This is Carol in Ozaukee County.
Yep.
And I'm working together with Marma McEntee in Washington County, and we're going to be doing a training for new volunteers and try to get more for both our counties. Is there a guideline as far as how long those trainings should be? You had mentioned a four-hour training, like two nights in Dane County.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any guideline? Is that about right, or should it be more? Because before I started, they did two-day trainings, like 6 hours each day.
Now, you're talking about people who are just going to be financial coaches.
Yes.
And do goal setting.
Yes.
I think the 4 hours is probably sufficient. Now, it depends who your clients are and if they have really special needs that these people need expert training on. And then if your volunteers are, if your volunteers are college students or some population that doesn't have a lot of financial experience, they might need more training. But if you're talking about, what we've had in Dane County are for some reason, they tend to be mostly women. Many of them have worked in the financial sector or at least managed their own finances in their own house or as a single parent or whatever. So they have a pretty good sense of a lot of these issues. So they didn't need a lot of review about, what does it mean when you don't pay your bills?
Okay.
Some volunteers may not know what happens when you don't pay your bills. I don't know.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't think there's any kind of template. This is a fairly new area, and the national trainings are 3 days followed by 6 weeks of coaching followed by three more days. So you can take this to many different levels. The International Coaching Federation, which is people who do life coaching or career coaching and, charge $300 an hour, they do 2-3 week trainings. So it's, very intensive with lots and lots of case studies and taped coaching sessions where they critique each other, that kind of thing.
This is Beth from Washburn County. When I was reviewing things that Diane Weber had left on her computer for me, I ran across a training that Diane and Gail Rose Martinez did. I believe it was back in 2004, and it was a very intensive training. I want to say it was at least 1:00 to 4:30 p.m. full day training. I believe it had 8 or 12 sessions to it. So that's something that I have in Washburn County. I don't know if that was successful or not. I didn't see any evaluations, but that's much longer than the four-hour training that you were suggesting. But I did run across that. I haven't used it because she didn't, from discussions with Diane, she said that it wasn't effective to train people in Washburn County because we're so small.
Training? Was it a coaching training or was it more on content?
It was training volunteers to do this financial counseling. So I don't know if it was necessarily with the coaching model in mind, but it was just getting people trained in
the basics of personal finance.
Right, but it was more than just this is what a spending plan is. It was this is how we can help other people.
Right. So that's a very different model, and that's why it takes so much more time to train people because they have to have some expertise. Coaches really don't have expertise. They're more or less an external sense of self-control and of self-monitoring. They help people reframe their goals and hold them accountable to reach their goals, but they're not financial experts. And that's why you don't need, as much training. I don't think you're going to find any existing coaching training out there because this is a pretty new concept. And, what is out there tends to be pretty more of a pilot than anything really refined. Well, so let me talk a little bit about some of the complements to coaching or, programs you might add on to coaching that can make them work. One is the biggest critique with coaching is that one of the strongest motivators for people to change behavior is not so much intrinsic but peers. So having a peer group that is doing something pressures you to do that same thing. And what coaching really misses is that peer-to-peer component. So one idea to think about is you might have regular meetings of coaches with their clients, partners, but occasionally you might have opportunities for just the clients or partners to meet with each other and to talk about what goals they had and to talk about their issues. Same way with the coaches. They can learn a lot from each other about strategies and techniques. And so that peer-to-peer component is oftentimes, in Dane County we just did one peer-to-peer meeting among the coaches a couple weeks ago, and we learned a lot, and I think they learned a lot too. So that can be a powerful additional piece to structure into this. As I said before, having specific financial topics or workshops integrated into the process makes a lot of sense. You don't do them right away. You want to give the coaches and clients, you know, a couple of sessions to meet. In the beginning, when we start a coaching relationship, it's all about creating that trust and that relationship. The early goals seem to be very small and very achievable, just to sort of start to build that relationship. So you have to give them time to sort of build that connection. Then as they start to get into some real goal setting, there becomes more appetite for the more focused kind of information. It's good to have the topics laid out in advance. As I said, in Dane County, we have pretty good success with a budgeting and spending plan after about 2 months, and then 2 months later, a credit repair, and then finally a savings one. So that's something to think about. Another thing to think about is that coaching doesn't have to be done face-to-face. I've talked about a model where we have, you know, regular times and people can meet. You know, for a lot of people, that doesn't meet their schedule as a volunteer or as a client or partner. So a lot of what's done in the, you know, when high-end coaches are working with high-wealth people is on the phone or email or text. You know, a simple email on a Sunday or a text on a Sunday, if somebody has a goal to make sure they pay their bills on time and their goal is to every Sunday open their mail and account for where their bills are, you know, that can be done with a text message or a quick phone call. So those kinds of models can make a lot of sense. One thing I want to point out is that people have to be motivated for coaching. So it's very difficult to force people into a coaching relationship if they don't want to do it. And you don't have to worry about this too much because people who aren't ready drop out. And when you have a client drop out of the process, assuming it's not because of something you did, if they missed emails or letters or, you know, somebody dropped the ball, but if they're just not following through, then they're not a good candidate for coaching. And maybe next year they might be. You know, I generally would encourage you to think about admittance to a coaching program as something that people apply for. They have to sort of affirmatively want to sign up for. And if they don't follow certain guidelines, if they don't, you know, if they miss a meeting, then they're out and they can try again next year. But this is an expensive thing in terms of time and energy to employ. So you want to make sure that people are really engaged in it, trying to make the most of it. The other thing is that some people will be very engaged in it and then start to drop off. And that's what we call graduation, and that's good. I mean, generally, we try to set these things with the beginning and the end, in part for the volunteer programs and for the paid programs, so that eventually that there's some moving on. But, you know, there'll be people who, once they start to achieve a few goals, start to get it and start to, you know, they start to kick in, and they don't need the coach anymore. And that graduation is fine, and it's always fine for a coach and a partner to say, you know what, I don't think we need to keep meeting. I don't think we need to keep setting goals. I think you're doing it fine on your own. And so, you know, volunteers may, you know, be disappointed in that they don't maybe have a couple more sessions to go, but it's okay if people do start to take off on their own. So last, let me talk a little bit about evaluation. Like I said before, we have there's probably 30 or 40 different evaluations of financial literacy education and financial counseling. Most of them show modest effects, if any effects. The biggest problem with those kinds of studies is we don't really have a good way to assign people. We have strong bias of who attends these kinds of programs and who follows through. And we have the same thing with coaching. People who stick with coaching tend to look great. They look like they have fantastically successful outcomes. But we can't say, but for coaching, would that have occurred? But generally, people who stick with coaching for the duration really, really love it. The coaches and volunteers really love it. They really feel like they help people make some progress. What we don't have is that long-term follow-up. A year later, did we help them practice and change their behavior to the extent that they can make a difference? We don't know that. But the indications are, at the very least, that education workshops provided in this setting are probably more powerful, that people absorb more information and are more likely to use that information than they would be in a workshop not in this kind of setting. Right now we have way too many different models to be able to generalize too much about what works and what doesn't work within coaching. But, you know, the train-the-trainer models have gotten a lot of good feedback. And, you know, even people in human services organizations who, in the end, aren't really serving as coaches, the coaching techniques have given them sort of new energy and helped them, just be better at what they do. And so there are aspects of coaching that we could all probably incorporate into our work, whether or not we actually do financial coaching with specific clients or not. So I think it's a powerful technique that can be useful to people in a lot of different settings. I would also say that too. Any further questions or thoughts?
I guess I have one. This is Beth from Washburn County. I'm looking into doing financial coaching, or more of like one-on-one, that accountability kind of thing with clients who are coming out of a rent assistance program or they need to get off that program. And I heard you say that, you know, we need stable people who have ways to reach those goals. Do you find that it's effective to also take those people from, you know, where they're at, where they can't pay their rent and they're on this assistance program, to getting them to set their goals that they're going to pay the bills that they can on time and then they're going to talk to their creditors and having those things, developing those skills, even though they might not be stable enough to start saving money or something. Do you think that would still be effective and would that still be coaching then?
Are they in crisis or are they sort of coming out of that?
I think some of them are still in crisis, but I think some of them will hopefully be coming out of it, or that we will help them start on their journey out of it.
Yeah. You know, I would be cautious, I guess. I mean, if people are really sort of on their on an upward trajectory and, you know, through the worst of the crisis, then, you know, helping them set goals and attain goals, and maybe they're as simple as, you know, just keeping a budget or opening a bank account, could be powerful. But I think it's also, you know, it's the kind of setting where there may be just a lot of other issues that get in the way. So it'll be important to, you know, in some ways triage clients, maybe of the, you know, say you have 24 clients that you might work with, maybe 5 of them are really good candidates for coaching and the rest need more of a counseling approach. And maybe in time they'll sort of move along the continuum and be ready for coaching, but that would be a sort of secondary level as opposed to the primary level.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? So in terms of our next steps with an extension, we've got 4 or 5 different pilots sort of going on right now around coaching. So hopefully we'll have those sort of written up and, you know, for people to look at and share by the summer. We're also talking about maybe doing a one-day workshop sometime this summer. We bring people together from Extension and from outside Extension and even nationally to talk about various coaching models and how it can be applied. I've been talking about creating an FYI site on financial coaching, so one of the fyi.ux.edu/financialcoaching once we get it set up, where we can share information about these various models and also share evaluation tools. We've got some surveys that we've sort of been tinkering with in different settings that might be useful as a pre and post survey, and as well as some of the coaching training tools could be shared there. So those are all things we've sort of got in the works, but some of you were on a call last week that Peggy Olive organized where we just tried to get some sharing among various county faculty who are involved in coaching work. And we certainly would like to encourage more people to be part of sort of a peer-to-peer network of people engaged in coaching. But are there other things that you think would be useful or anything that I just mentioned that you would say we need to get moving on fast?
Michael, this is Peggy. Can I jump in just to say that I will have, for anyone who might be interested in finding out more about our Head Start project that we're doing financial coaching with, I'm going to be having a WIS line on Monday, March 29th. So I've heard from a few people, I've heard online here today, but if anyone else is interested, drop me an email and I can get, you know, dial up and some other information to you just to find out more.
Peggy, did you have any other comments about the big picture or anything I missed? As somebody who's actually doing coaching?
Yeah, I was just taking notes of a few things I should probably stop doing.
Other comments or wishes for your wish list from us? For those of you involved with United Ways, I will say that United Way of America is very excited about this volunteer coaching model. In part, it comes from a couple of programs, one in Connecticut and one in New York, where CEOs of big companies have been able to use their employees, you know, get their employees in basically a 3-month volunteer agreement where they were just budget coaches. They help people set a budget and stick to their budget for 3 months. The CEOs liked it because it was good PR and they got to engage their folks in the community. It was time limited, didn't take them too much away from their other duties. So some United Ways have heard about those models and gotten excited about them. United Way of America has done some work on that. United Way of America is going to be part of some meetings that I'm going to be involved in with Casey and Bank of America and some other funders who are interested about trying to formalize this coaching concept a bit more.
That might be what our United Way was interested in.
Mm-hmm.
So do you know when those meetings will be?
Well, that would be the United Way of America.
Yeah, our United Way person wanted to know when there's were going to be some meetings this spring.
Yeah, I think they'd probably want to talk to the United Way of America people.
Oh, okay.
And that's not always the clearest chain of command, but yeah.
Okay, thanks.
So anything else people would like us to begin to look into that would help you support you in this work? All right. Well, thanks, everybody. I know it's a beautiful day, and you've probably got other things you want to do, so you're not stuck in the office like today, but thanks for your time.